Hey, friendo, Steve here.
And Larson.
I am also here.
No, that's not... Okay, so we've perfected our three-man intro. We decided to complicate things even further by adding a fourth member. We've been building up to this for a couple weeks now. We've been teasing who's going to be the fourth member of the Going In Raw roster. And so we're here to introduce Total Biscuit!
Yeah!
Hi there.
Welcome to the show. It's so good to have you.
Very glad to be part of this stable.
We figured that the landscape of professional wrestling podcasts is becoming so brutal, so vicious, that we had to bolster our ranks.
Yeah.
So we reached out, and we got Total Biscuit here on the show, and we're happy to have him.
Yeah.
Absolute pleasure to be here.
Larson, Dan, do you have anything to add to this?
No, you keep going. It seems like you're enjoying it until it reaches the point where you stop, and it's going to be good.
Yeah.
We want to see what happens when you stop the promo. Come on in, Promise. Do the NXT way.
No, see, if I was in an actual wrestling stable, that's what I would do. I would just keep, I would go, and then it stopped, and I said, do you guys have anything to add?
We were like, man, we're pretty all right, thank you.
No, you could
just
send it
off.
Brian
just looks like
Steve.
He's losing the will to live as he watches this match.
Yeah, this is rough.
We're periscoping Larson's Undertaker versus Undertaker match.
One of the Undertakers got tombstone. I'm not sure which one it is, and I feel like him right now.
Oh, that means you're getting near the end of that match.
Yeah,
2 minutes in.
Something like that. It feels like an eternity.
We're getting ahead of ourselves right now. You're talking about the book of the match. Later on in the book of the match, we got SummerSlam 94. So if you guys want to pause and go ahead and watch that now, I'm sorry. That sucks to be you.
We recommend that you don't do that.
Yeah. The people in the white coats will be sent around to your address immediately just to make sure
Just take our word for it. What we're going to say, hopefully, will be much more entertaining than the actual pay-per-view itself. I don't see how it couldn't be.
We'd just sit in silence and it would be roughly more entertaining.
But first, we have a lot to go over today.
We
sort of went over Payback already a couple weeks ago, I believe. But Dan, did you have anything you wanted to add to that? Because you said, I'm going to give you all the credit in the world. You sat through 12 hours of wrestling yesterday.
I did.
I don't think I've done that since college.
I could hardly sit through this match right now.
There are many other reasons for that, and it's not the length.
But did you want to add anything to Payback? You kind of enjoyed it, if I understood your tweets correctly.
Especially from, like, Payback was the one we were expecting a lot from. It was pretty nice. I especially liked the mini Shield reunion with Seth going for the fist bump, and then just the other two just going like, no, we're going to kick the shit out of you. But it looked like he believed it with those eyes, like, we can be friends again, guys. And it was a beautiful moment. It was just one of those real beautiful moments.
That was absolutely. It was our highlight of that show as well. My only thing I'll just say about this about Payback, it was a fun show. It was a good show. It kind of felt like a consequence-free show.
Yeah.
And so it felt more like kind of a glorified Raw in a way. But there were lots of fun moments. The matches were pretty decent. And that mini Shield reunion was absolutely worth the $9.99 a month we're paying.
Yeah. We're paying that? Oh, my God. Thought we were together. I was just thinking, right? If they upped it to like $10... Yeah, they just up it. Just up that single cent more.
Oh, by a cent.
But up it by a cent. Do you think we'd get we'd be able to notice that 1 cent of increased professionalism and quality in the matches?
What is one point? They have 1.3 million subs. What is that times 1 cent?
Is that,
Larson, you're a math guy.
Is that
$1,000?
No, that's more than that. It's 100.
10,000?
Yeah, I think it's 13,000. Is that right?
13,000? Really that much. That's not worth it.
They could charge us an extra cent, and then
that's
they
like
could
10 seconds of broadcast time.
Fantastic! We'll have 10 seconds more. I don't know.
We could have 10 seconds more of the icy belt.
More of Kane. That's how we all want the time to be spent.
Yeah.
I like Kane. I don't care what you say. We have a lot to talk about. People are probably pissed right now that we're not already immediately talking about what I think could be a potential, at least in the WWE, match of the year candidate night.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens versus John Cena.
Oh, yes.
Oh my God, Dan! Last we talked, I was I had a believability issue with Kevin Owens that I believe at this point has now been completely gone for me. I'm totally all in on Kevin Owens. I'm going to start wearing his merchandise. I'm going to name, if I have another child, I'm going to name it Kevin Owens here. And I'm all in on Kevin Owens. I love it. And that match was fucking fantastic.
Yes.
This is the upside to Cena winning all the time, is when he doesn't win, it is something incredibly special.
Mm-hmm.
That's his thing. He's won all the people he screwed over is for this moment. this moment of thing, because I saw people talking that like Punk never beat Cena clean ever, and it's like there's like a very very few amount of people that have actually ever beat Cena clean.
Yeah, it was only sort of about four, if I recall correctly, wasn't it? And they were pretty much the biggest names there. The thing I like about Cena the most is the fact that he's like that annoying video game boss that just won't die, and you have to pull out every special move you possibly have and use all your consumables and everything like that, which means that whoever's facing him gets to go through a laundry list of moves. And in the case of Kevin Owens, I saw a bunch of stuff from him that I hadn't seen from him on NXT or anything along those lines. I assume he was pulling that stuff back in the sort of minor leagues when he was involved in the indies, but there were some moves that I've never even seen in a WWE ring at any point, and that was fantastic to watch.
Yeah, the top rope kind of fisherman suplex thing he did. I don't think I've ever seen that, period.
Yeah, no. I watched him. I was telling Larson a couple days ago, I was watching a Ring of Honor match between him and Jay Briscoe, this fellow that I think the WWE's been kind of after. And it's one of those, Ring of Honor is one of those things where you can get, you can still get away with pile drivers there. Like, they don't care what you do. Yeah. Like, they assume you're going to be fine. And that sort of, I'm trying to think how to describe it. Like, Cena was sort of rolled up in the fetal position while sort of, Owens was holding him up. And they used to do that as a pile driver where the guy was sort of all rolled up and then he'd bring him down and he modified it for the WWE, so he sort of side slams him instead.
Yeah, it made it more like a small package powerbomb as opposed to the
right, exactly. Yeah. And it was fucking beautiful. It still looks brutal, not as brutal as the Ring of Honor version, but also, yeah, he didn't do that in NXT. A lot of this stuff he hadn't done in NXT, and it's great that it's like he was just saving up all his moves.
Well, that's how they're booking him in NXT too. He was just, you know, the unstoppable force there, so all he had to do was powerbomb, kick, punch, cannonball, powerbomb.
And surprise, surprise, Lawler, in my opinion, sort of, and maybe this was, I have to believe this was planned, but Lawler, towards the beginning of the match, not really teased it, but sort of brought our expectations down, not to expect it, because he was like, this isn't the kind of guy who you're going to get a moon, he said this specifically, who you're going to get a moonsault from. And I was thinking to myself, I'm like, wait a second, I think he might have been doing moonsaults in Ring of Honor, because he's got jacked up knees.
Yeah.
And sure enough, he pulled that out. I was like, holy shit. I mean, Hilton was here. It was like, holy shit moment after holy shit moment. So my parents came over to hang out with the baby, and they brought pizza. So of course, right before the finish, when Cena started delivering, I heard that sigh.
Yeah.
When
Cena starts delivering, I got something to relate to this. But finish your tale.
When Cena started delivering all the clotheslines to Owens, I was like, and he was selling the shit out of them. I was like, okay, I have another 7 minutes left. I've seen this before. I've got another 7 minutes left before I'm almost positive Cena's going to reverse the powerbomb thing, the whatever he calls the powerbomb he does, into like an AA somehow. I don't know how he's going to do it, but he's going to do it. And I'm going to go get some pizza. I go get some pizza. Then my dad asked me some stupid question, which I love my dad, but sometimes his questions are just completely ridiculous. And then I hear Hilton literally come in my room. I walk in and I'm like, what happened? He said, he just fucking won. I'm like, who? Cleanly, Owens, you idiot. I'm like, well, I got pizza, so I got that going for me. So, yeah.
It's
anyways,
sort of like at WrestleMania when we went, right before the main event starts, Steve goes, I'm going to go to the merchandise table. And so he's gone for the first 10 minutes of the match while Lesnar's wiping the floor with Reigns.
Yeah, but that's different, though. I knew that there was going to be a massive buildup with packages galore, and then I knew it was going to be Lesnar beating the shit out of... I knew that was going to be time on that one.
Okay.
This one completely took me off guard, but the finish, I mean, the clean finish is fucking... That was beautiful.
Yeah. So I'm assuming now he's leaving NXT, Mr. Owens, and he's going up to... Right, I haven't heard anything, but I believe it would be.
There's rumors that he's being signed to the main roster. God knows when that is, and it's screwed up even more by the fact that NXT tapes in advance, so God knows what's going on with that. I mean, it may be a case if he ends up in his, you know, at his 69th feud with the entire roster of NXT, ends up being Samoa Joe, ends up getting eventually beaten by Samoa Joe or whatever, and then heads off to Raw or something along those lines. But
apparently he's been advertised for Raw's up through August, I think.
Yeah, and obviously he's in Money in the Bank as well in a rematch, by the looks of it.
Yeah.
The smart money for me would be he stays, he does double duty. And you're TB, the logistics, because they tape in advance. But talk about, you know, we talked about so much about them legitimizing the U.S. championship. They have completely legitimized a fucking promotion now by bringing Owens's. And that's, I think that was kind of the goal, because they want to make NXT, or the rumor is they want to make NXT a traveling brand to compete with the other two brands. Or, yeah, I guess the other two brands.
Well, there's only one brand, really.
Do they consider it two brands? Well, I mean, I know they have two they have two traveling house shows. They
yeah,
still
but
have
I guess
an
the
A team and a B
team. Or just one brand. They don't have the brand.
Yeah, sure.
But I know what you mean, yeah.
But yeah, and so, I mean, talk about legitimizing an entire promotion, like a great first step at least, making the NXT champion defeat the legend of the main roster, I thought that was just a freaking brilliant stroke. I mean, that has Triple H written all fucking over it.
Yeah.
And Triple H was fine telling us that with like a selfie with Owens before the match and a selfie with Owens after the match.
That's it. Very Triple H could never beat Cena, and this is the way he does it. He's like, well, if I can't beat you this way, I'll make my own promotion and then bring that over here.
I'll make
that.
Yeah, I'm also making the comment that NXT was a Cena beating factory that was set up by Triple H just for that sort of purpose. He's playing the long con.
That's what it is, though. I mean, because in that, there was like, what was it, 5 of the 6 NXT champions were in that pay per view.
Yeah.
So,
how does Bo Dallas feel? He's like, man. Fucking Rollins
I had no
is,
idea he was champion.
Rollins is the current world heavyweight champion. Mm-hmm. Neville is being pushed to the fucking moon.
Yep.
I was having the moon pushed to him. It's just the
Yeah. And then Bo Dallas, who is it just me or is he seeming to get fatter and faster? Let's go by.
There were some really awkward spots with him where the pudge was becoming obvious, where he was sort of on all fours above Neville, and it's like, wow, it's a swinging down a little bit there, mate, isn't it? It's like, not that I'd mess with him in a fight in a million bloody years, but, you know, he's got a bit extra there.
He's so close to just the necessity of joining the Wyatt family.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this. He should, because his current character is perfect for the Wyatt family, because essentially Bo Dallas is a cult leader, but the sort of a happy cult, a bit Scientology, they're not a cult legally. A bit sort of that sort of side of that everything is awesome, even though he's kind of being a massive asshole to everyone. That works with Bray. He could be Bray's PR guy.
Yeah,
and still
Bray's the
be
mastermind
really
of it all.
Yeah.
I agree with that totally. That could be built into something really, really cool that could benefit Bo immensely because
he needs something.
Just,
right
and coming out with the diaper tights just
it could also benefit Wyatt as well because I do feel that like having a bunch of feuds that he's lost matches in has not really helped Wyatt whatsoever. And now it's just getting a little bit serious, like, oh, spooky promo. Who's he gonna target next? Here is contrived reason for this feud. Feud is now over. Now next feud. It's getting a little bit silly.
We've talked about this before, but me and Larson, and I think Dan, to an extent, we've talked about this, that my problem with Bray, I love everything about him. Mm-hmm. The problem is, whenever he has a feud these days, there's no tangible consequence. There's no tangible stakes involved. You can only do the abstract sort of, this is what you're about, and this is what I'm going to deconstruct. It might work sort of on the page, I guess, like if somebody's writing this out as like a screenplay or something. But it doesn't work in terms of wrestling where you need to have something tangible on the line
for
it to really, really work. Or some personal relationship that really works. And again, with Bo Dallas, if they start blurring the lines, that could be really, really cool.
They need to tie him into people's absence time. They need to set him up as the person who battles people before their absence, because they could vanish after being beaten by Bray Wyatt. And he's like, and they've gone. And when they come back, they're just a little bit there for a little while.
Right, they're changed.
Changed, and they've gone through. Because he's the face of fear, he's always. It's Bray Wyatt, the face of fear. And no one's afraid of him. Not a single person. Like, it doesn't matter. He's turned the lights off and he has an electric lantern. That's fine. His chair moves.
Face
oh, no.
Terrible headwear.
But yeah, I think if they tie him into people just disappearing for a little while, where's this guy? And then they come back and they're a little bit more sort of ash and like, yeah, let's not talk about that. And then they come back properly a little bit later. You just have that sort of easy. And Bray's getting gradually stronger and stronger and going up through the ranks. And you have him sort of almost taking their powers and then he gets higher and higher with it. That's a fun thing you could do with him.
I thought the perfect example of a Bray Wyatt feud is when he did the Daniel Bryan thing, when he brought Daniel Bryan into the family and he sort of did the brainwashing thing. I thought, and if you remember the blow off match at Raw that time, the crowd was huge. Huge when Bryan finally broke free of the chains of Bray Wyatt.
Yeah.
And that was, I thought that was the most effective feud that I've seen Bray Wyatt probably in, off the top of my head anyways. But I remember it being very effective. And if they continue that kind of thing where he tries to sort of like absorb people into his his family, create a new family, I don't know, something along those lines where he's really, like you said, Dan, like he's really trying to change people, and going through a Bray Wyatt feud really changes who you are. That would be something that's a lot more than, oh, you know, Ryback, I don't know what
you smell and you're a cartoon character.
Yeah, you're a cartoon character, man. Come back to reality.
Well, the other thing about Wyatt, it seems like they're having him spin his wheels until they have a real opportunity for him.
Yeah.
Like, here, let's just keep this guy in people's minds, and then when it's finally his time to, you know, get into the main event scene proper, then we'll really push him. But right now it's just, you know, hey, we have to have him involved somehow. Toss him against Ryback.
Yeah.
Who's he fighting? I haven't seen him for a while. Who's the last person he went up against?
Ryback. Ryback. Payback, I think.
Yeah, Payback.
Oh, yeah. I skimmed that match pretty much.
yeah,
he didn't miss
it. When you start getting into the eighth hour of wrestling, you're like, speed through this. I've already sat through Undertaker versus Undertaker. Let's just move it along now.
Why do I also have a feeling that didn't he fight Ambrose in a Raw at some point? Wasn't he booked by Kane?
Ambulance.
They had a whole series. Yeah.
That was the
there's no actual storyline number to that whatsoever. It was just Kane saying, "Here's a scary guy that's supposed to soften you up a little bit. Go." You know, that was really all it was.
That's what.
Well, they tried to do the first promo Wyatt did in his Ambrose feud was similar to the first one he did with Cena, where he was saying, "Well, you're not who you appear to be. Yada, yada, yada. I'm going to expose you for who you really are." And then Ambrose came out and just kind of said, okay.
Yeah.
And that was kind of their feud.
Yeah. I liked his stuff with Cena when it was the, especially in the matches, when it seemed like he's like trying to turn Cena to the dark side. It's like in the fucking Star Wars.
There was some hilarious stuff in that. The cage match with the kid at the end that just pops up out of nowhere? It was like, what?
Yeah.
Oh, I've remembered that now.
Okay, yeah, and the funny thing is for that, me and Larson, we both watch American football over here. That kid is in a hilarious commercial with Cam Newton, where he's talking about how this quarterback over here is like his favorite. And he's like, "One day I'm going to be like you." And Cam's like, "Oh, cool." He was like, "And then I'm going to go to college and be the Heisman winner. And then I'm going to be the first number one. I'm going to be the first pick in the draft. And then I'm going to win the Super Bowl. And I'm going to be your mom's favorite player." And he's like, "Wait, what?" And so this kid that he delivers like some great lines is like, so it kind of took me personally out of a little bit. I'm like, "Oh, I know that kid. He's in that hilarious Cam Newton commercial. Now he's hanging out with Bray Wyatt. That's weird. Where's his mom?"
That would be great if Cena recognized him. He was like, it's that guy. And that's Wyatt used to distract Cena to get the win. That would have been great. It's like, "It's that guy that came from the commercial. Oh, can I have your autograph?" And wham, roll up pin.
Roll up pin. Yeah. Wham, roll up pin.
I know.
What were some other highlights from Elimination Chamber last night? We had sort of, I'll dive into this and see what you guys think. We had the tale of two diametrically opposed chamber matches.
Yes.
We had the tale of the tag match, which was actually a really fun, kind of inventive, creative match. And then we had the steaming pile of lumbering shit called the Intercontinental Chamber match.
Yeah.
Let's compare and contrast, shall we?
Okay.
Well, one was an Elimination Chamber match, and the other one was just a six-man thing where it was harder to see inside what was happening. And that was the real difference. They really didn't use the chambers.
Absolutely didn't. Outside of some ridiculous nonsense like, inexplicably, the door fell off. And then, this door's stuck now. All right, okay,
I the door came off and they were like, "Is Mark Henry coming in?" I'm like, "It's no DQ, just go kill everyone. Why would you wait?"
Yeah, it didn't even make any sense for Sheamus to be upset about the fact that he couldn't get out anyway, because you can't lose unless you get pinned, so he might as well have just stayed in there for the entire time. And since he's a heel, he would have known that anyway, which is why the whole thing sounded ridiculous. Like, "Oh, he's itching to get into the fight. Wait a minute, why? For what reason? Just let the others beat the crap out of each other and then he'll finish it."
I couldn't figure out, was that, because his little pendant thing.
Yeah, I think it seemed like they were trying to say that he did that purposely, but it was not really that.
Didn't make any sense.
Is that what they were saying? Like, to me, I was like, okay, this could be just a complete fluke of that, that whatever the fucking cross pendant was, coming off and somehow getting in there. Like, I didn't know. I did, like, storyline wise, writing wise, I had no fucking clue, to the point that I was like, oh, was that just like a fluke weird thing? And he was like, really trying to figure out what's going on.
Because they did it wrong. They should have had Seamus when they couldn't open the door. So they go, the door doesn't open, just standing there, just laughing and just being like, This is my plan. And they're like, wait, what's that thing? And then the camera could see the pendant and you could zoom in. Look, he's locked it. He's locked himself in, so he's going to wait for you to go out. And that's how you play it like a heel. Because he wasn't playing like a heel.
Yeah. I thought to build it or to sort of exhibit, like, it, I mean, this is just me trying to figure out, like, what the fuck are you doing? Because it didn't make any sense. But one thought in my head was, oh, is he just going to, like, kick through the door? Is that what's going to happen?
Because
these things are not very sturdy. Like, people are being thrown through them. I thought, oh, this is kind of cool. Like, they're trying to make him look strong. Granted, like, cool in a match is just a giant piece of shit. You're trying to find anything to cling on to. I was like, oh, are they just going to have him kick through it and show how much of a badass he is? Like, that's kind of original, I think. I think they've done that before.
Yeah.
I want to say it was like Brock Lesnar did that or something. That would make sense. But
I think I've
but yeah, and then it was just, oh, look at that. I took out my little necklace I'm opening up. I didn't get that at all.
He should have just played it totally as a heel and just wait until he was last. Just wait for everybody else to finish. And then be like, then pull the thing out and go, oh, no. And then just open the door and then just.
How did that happen?
Yeah.
I think what didn't help as well was the fact that the commentary team made some of the most ridiculous remarks about it. It's like, is he picking the lock with his cross pendant? What lock? I mean, it's where? What are you talking about? Like, what were you eating before this? I mean, can I have some? I want some of that. Like, usually the commentary team's fairly incoherent, but one, Booker T wasn't on the team, so they had no excuse for the incoherence. And secondly, that makes no bloody sense. So what are you... I don't even know.
That'd be great if the locks were on the inside, like the lights go on, then it selects someone, and the referee walks up and goes, "Ah, shit!" It just has it. Could you open this, please? Just angry. Could you put it in?
And then the Mark Henry thing happened, and then somebody was selected to come in, and then if you notice, like in the little graphic, like the lights were started to shine on Mark Henry's as if he wasn't already out there, and then they corrected it and just started putting it on the two.
The nameplate was still there.
The nameplate was still there, exactly. Mm-hmm. Everything that could have gone, and it just illustrated, you have Mark Henry, who I didn't think he could possibly get any slower until I saw him last night. Oh my God, he was I was stunned. It was like watching Yokozuna when he was 600 pounds. He could barely fucking walk.
600 pounds? Jesus.
Yeah, it was funny. He went from like, I think, 450 in his heyday, in his prime, to 600, and he could barely walk and he was still wrestling, and then he died like shortly after, I think.
Why do all wrestling stories end that way? And then he died.
That's just
at
the old age
of 31. That's as far as
again, with our book of the match, I had to go through this and be like, oh, isn't he dead yet? Oh no, maybe not. Okay.
I've got a question to ask, actually, which is, like, how much do you think that the lack of Rusev's presence in that match actually affected it? Was it going to be a stinker regardless?
I would say based on the lack of storytelling combined with the lack of decent spots, because if you're going to have Elimination Chamber, you need either a decent story or you need really good spots, and that match had neither.
But if Rusev...
The only storyline that might change is because it would be the Ziggler-Rusev angle.
Yeah.
That's the only thing he probably could have added to that match.
If Rusev was sort of the linchpin or like a catalyst for some spots that they had planned, and Mark Henry was literally the only person who they could have got and he couldn't pull off those moves because he was obviously half paralyzed by whatever happened when he was away, then I could see how that match probably would have been better, because I would think taking one person out of a six-man cog or out of a six-man machine and with stuff planned, I could see how that's a possibility. But just watching, even when like Ryback, who granted is not like the most proficient technical wrestler in history at all, but when he was fighting somebody like Ziggler, who can sell anybody, even they seemed awkward together. Like everybody just seemed really awkward, even when they were pairing off. There was just something wrong happening, and I have no idea what it was. I don't know if... I have no idea. It just... Something seemed really super off,
and
I'm not sure...
Could have been a combination of Rusev being out, and then the Mark Henry thing may have been an accident. And those two things would throw a match for him. We've got these ideas. Okay, we have these ideas. Okay, fuck it. Let's wing this, like, from scratch.
Yeah, that could be.
Because, yeah, I mean, cause like, it did look weird when Mark Henry's thing opened, the ref just runs up and is like, no! And it's like, it's no DQ. Why are you
no DQ.
It's more of a, no, hang on a second. Yeah. Yes, okay, yeah, you can come out now. We'll
you know, I think you're right, because Mark Henry did look kind of confused. Like, yeah. He had the actor face on, like, should I come out here or not come out here? Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think it was just a clever... Another thing that somebody pointed out to me on Twitter was, and then I started picking up on it, and this is completely sort of off topic, I guess, but I think one of the cameras had, like, a really hot mic or something.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Because
I have never heard as many talky-talky at any point. It's ridiculous how much...
It was... Like, during Cena-Owens, there was one spot where Cena had Owens up in a headlock.
A headlock, and you hear, like, two whole sentences from Cena.
You hear a lot of chatter there, and it was hot. It was loud. And so it made me wonder, like, I think they got it figured after that, because I didn't remember hearing it really after that.
Well, Cena's been doing that a lot lately. Like, pretty much half the spots he calls, you can hear now.
It's weird. Cena and Paige, like, really, are the two that I noticed the most. Frankly, Paige just swears her head off when something goes wrong, which I find hilarious. But outside of that, Cena's always been the mouthy one. And some people even make the comment that that's why he's a safe person to work with, because no one can ever mishear anything that's going on. But simultaneously, part of the illusion is you're not supposed to be able to hear that crap. And the first time I heard it, now I can never not hear it. There's always something in a Cena match that I'll hear. But it wasn't just him, it was contagious. Like, Ziggler was calling stuff. You could hear it inside the bloody chamber, for God's sake. I don't know what the hell was going on with that.
Yeah, they all had mics on. It was a new experiment they were trying.
They're all wearing lavs somewhere. It's like, if you look very closely, they've got those skin-colored lavalier microphones.
It's like for an ESPN special.
Yeah, Cena's working for NFL Films now.
Well, it's like Swerve. It's the reality era, you know? So they're just ripping the kayfabe to pieces.
They're doing live. They're doing live director's commentary. Yeah, and in this moment, I was having a wonderful headlock.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the special edition DVD they're releasing later. You understand?
They stop and do like, hold on, where's the script? Hold on, okay, line. Yeah, okay. So I say this now.
That
would
be
okay,
a great gimmick match where they just they throw it out. They break the fourth wall completely. They bring Punk back to do it. He just brings the script out from his trunks. It's like, yeah. So the next spot's this. We better get to it. I watch the hell out of that. That would be brilliant.
If Deadpool owned the WWE, that would be
fantastic. There you go.
There you go.
Yeah.
Other high spots. Let's see. Let me go to the card thing. Neville Bode. We had talked about that. Women's match didn't impress. Although I'll say this again, I'm glad that Naomi still has those bright shoes.
Yeah, those shoes.
They're fun. I was afraid when she turned heel they'd get rid of those, but it's good that they did that. So at least the only defining thing about her isn't the fact that she throws her ass at you as her special finishing move. But
that is pretty impressive, though. I mean, to literally use your ass as a projectile weapon.
My brain hasn't been taken off and being just loved. Yeah.
Someone made the comment that the annoying thing about Naomi and Nikki fighting is that both of their special moves refer to... one refers to the arse, the other refers to the breasts. It's like, could you get any more blatant? Like, what pissed me off, and it's the same thing that pissed my wife off as well, because we both watch a lot of NXT, and she loves the women's division, as do I. Like, I'm getting so much respect for the wrestlers involved in NXT women's division. And as soon as Nikki won again, it was a case of, oh, God, it's going nowhere. Like, the whole division is spinning its bloody heels. She retains yet again for no apparent reason. And what annoys me more than anything is leading up to it, she'd been beaten by pretty much everyone on the Divas roster. So it made very little sense for her to retain in such a dominant fashion in a triple threat, which frankly should not have happened. I would have loved to see Paige get it. I would have anybody but Nikki retaining would have been a good, better result for that match.
It kind of makes me wonder if this is the kind of thing where, I mean, Triple H is obviously getting more and more influence as the months go by.
Yeah.
It makes me wonder if that's the one thing where he's like, you know what? I'm going to lose that battle for now while I build up this incredible NXT roster of females. And now they're starting to sort of push or promote or sort of on the underground level, or on the down low level, the idea of Becky Lynch, Bayley, Charlotte, and Sasha Banks, they're calling themselves the four horsewomen of wrestling.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it makes me wonder if they're just they're waiting for Becky Lynch to get a couple more big matches in her, and then they're going to push all four of them out there, mm-hmm. like they did with the original batch of NXT guys is the Nexus,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which that first little impression they left was really cool when they came out, destroyed Cena, destroyed the set, destroyed everything. Mm-hmm. If they do something similar with those ladies and then just completely transform the women's division in one big fell push,
yeah,
that wouldn't surprise me if he was just sort of like, you know what, we'll let this stand. I'm going to do something really big in a little bit.
Yeah.
And I hope that's the case, because I think it'd be pretty effective.
I hope that's the case as well, because they sent a couple of women up there. They sent Summer Rae up, and she became basically nobody. I mean, for God's sake, she's hanging off Miz's arm. That's all she does now. And they sent Emma up there as well. The theme music and the gimmick completely failed, as to be expected. You know, it was goofy in NXT. NXT loves the goofy stuff. That's fine. Put that in front of a Raw crowd, and people are like, well, I guess it's time to go to the bathroom now. But, I do hope that you're right on that. Because if they start drip-feeding that talent in, I think the same bloody thing is going to happen. Because mm-hmm. their bloody obsession with keeping the Bellas relevant for some reason... And I'm going to cynically assume it's for eye candy reasons only, and that sucks.
For, the Total
it's,
Divas
it's for the Total
thing.
Divas show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it is.
And I just, I think you're right, and I hope you're right. Just send all four of them up there, completely reshape the Divas division overnight, get some real storylines in there that don't rely on Total Divas, and let's have a Divas division that isn't purely driven by this idea that the only reason women feud is because they're catty and insane.
Mm-hmm.
Which is all the Raw roster seems to say.
I can't remember where it was, but there was a thing that says that when they write the women characters, don't really consider them faces or heels. They just have sort of catty as just everyone's personality. And it's
that's
like,
true,
oh, what happens when women get together? And it's all just that.
God, please no.
I just love. I mean, this is such. It's such a small, tiny thing, and I recognized it, like, I don't know, a couple months ago, that they call the NXT women's division the women's
division.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And not the Divas division. I love that so much.
It would
much,
be interesting
and I want
if,
them.
If they bring the four of them up from NXT as the four horsewomen, if they can't come up claiming, you know, we're not Divas, we are women.
Yeah.
We're reclaiming this division.
That would be wonderful.
That title.
That
this is
a
women's
huge.
Division now.
That would be fucking huge. Mm-hmm. Like, give them their own shirts. Like, that would be a... That would be, like... Back when China was the fucking IC champion. That was huge.
Yeah.
That was so fucking cool. And we got a small sliver of what could be when they brought, what's her name? Awesome Kong up to the women's division.
Yeah. Oh, they
and
brought her over. Yeah.
They brought her over. Yeah, they signed her from TNA or whatever. And it was like, holy shit, a dominant physical force who is obviously a no bullshit woman, mm-hmm. not a diva. She mm-hmm. is a hardcore fucking, like, she's going to tear some shit up, mm-hmm. and then she like got pregnant or whatever and went away.
Yeah.
But I mean, that would be fucking amazing, and it'd be money. I think it'd be a lot of money. You see how what the reaction is right now on Twitter for, you know, when the women put together the matches that they are, they're main eventing NXT. It's
fantastic PR.
As well. That's what you want to do. You take mm-hmm. the titles with them, and then they take the get rid of the. You can take the NXT Women's, and then smush have a battle for the NXT Women's versus mm-hmm. the Divas, and then wipe out the Divas title. Then you just make it the Women's Championship.
Women's
and NXT
Championship.
Get another one, their own Women's one.
Get rid of burn that bloody butterfly belt. Yeah, it's a hate for the Women's Division.
Ugh.
You know, you mentioned that they called it the Women's Division in NXT. Although I do notice that I think it's Byron's fault mostly that he keeps slipping back into calling them Divas. And
I noticed that a little bit too. Yeah, I didn't. You're probably absolutely right about Byron. I didn't notice that it was him. That's probably where I heard it from. But I was disappointed. Like last time I was watching NXT, I was kind of disappointed because I heard the term diva. And I was like, come on, no, they're women. Come on, that's no. One thing we forgot to talk about. We were talking about the Tale of Two Chamber matches, and we went so heated on how crappy the IC Chamber match was. We didn't really mention how fun the tag matches were.
Fun was the right term as well. It was just a blast. Like, it was silly, and they did all sorts of ridiculous things. Having El Torito in there, you knew he was going to get up to some shenanigans. I'm just disappointed they didn't put Natalya on top of the other pod and have her just do something. But that was just pure fun match. It was a great way to kick the whole thing off. I was just grinning from ear to ear the entire way through. Just I wanted to see what ridiculous thing they'd do next. And it had a great mix of comedy, fun spots, a couple of botches here and there, but you could still enjoy it. I think the only disappointment for me was that Lucha got kicked out so early.
Yeah.
Well, that was because Kalisto was attempting suicide in every single move that he tried. So I gotta climb on this, and then here, and leap off, and every time.
Spider-Man. Beautiful.
Kalisto really does seem like that, because, like, all you know about him is that he comes out, he moves very fast, and he does every crazy fucking thing you could possibly think of.
I love it.
He reminds me of, like, if you're just playing a character in a video game, and he's the guy who'll just do every crazy fucking thing, and then just don't worry about it because you're a video game character and you're going to respawn. Like, that's what he reminds me of. He's just, like, this mindless guy.
I'm climbing up the helicopter in Times Square, and here comes the pain. Why? I don't care!
Exactly. But when he started climbing, I was just shitting. I was like, oh my God. And then luckily, all those bodies just started coalescing towards the middle. I'm like, oh, thank God.
They're all there waiting, saying, come on.
They're all just waiting. Come okay, on. Buddy, we're going to do this. We're going to do this.
Waving them in like he's an aircraft through the lights.
Yeah. And then as soon as he falls, I'm just scanning around. I'm like, okay, did anybody land awkwardly? Is he okay? Is everybody okay?
I know.
Well, it did look like he was going to attempt some sort of flip because he was swinging backwards and forwards. And then I think he realized, hang on a minute, if I do this and try to get any height, I'm just going to whack my head off the top of the chamber. So I'll just drop on him. It'll be fine. Mm-hmm. And I think, as you were saying, they were down there waiting for him. So they they couldn't just stand there awkwardly because it would have been obvious what was going on.
It's good. It's I like that he's trying something that he probably obviously didn't practice first.
Yeah.
No. I'm just going to go ahead and climb. You want to practice this before we have time? Yeah. He's like,
as he's going, I would just whisper someone, catch me. What?
Yeah.
And the guy on the camera goes, he said, catch him. Probably turn this down a little bit.
He said, catch
him. That was a horrible bump with Big E in that match, where he hitting his head on the chamber.
Oh, the door, yeah.
Yeah. Ooh. It really looked like it.
Oh, you heard that. It was like,
yeah,
bang,
that was like,
whoa.
That was a really fun sequence, and it got me so excited about the potential, because I love the primetime players.
That's fun. Yeah.
I love them. I love Titus O'Neil. I think Darren Young's a great sort of sidekick for him.
Yeah.
And to the idea of a primetime players New Day feud, I think it's great, because you saw Titus O'Neil and Big E, and Titus was sort of just tossing Big E around.
He throws people everywhere. He's so much fun.
He does.
And he looks like he can as well. I mean, he's that big.
He's huge. He is huge. And he's got like the weirdest sort of stuttery movements.
Yeah.
And he just looks like he's just brimming with power and like energy or something. But he's hilarious as shit. And so is the New Day. And I want to see like a big money feud between those two teams.
Absolutely.
It'd be great. And I really thought, okay, well, there's no way they're gonna have the World Heavyweight Championship change hands tonight. So I figured that maybe they'd have the tag belts change over to the primetime players. And it looked like we were close to it. And then I think I turned away for half a second. I don't even know what the finish was with that. It seemed pretty. Was it abrupt? Was I just completely not paying attention? What was the finish?
It was a triple pin. They all jumped on him.
Oh, did they?
Okay.
New Day jumped on him.
Oh, that sounds fun. Okay.
Yeah,
that's a typical New Day way to finish it off, isn't it? And then that also nicely plays into the fact that the Authority wins again, because they're the guys that put all three of them in the chamber and had them come out last in the first place. But New Day shenanigans the entire time were just absolutely perfect. You know, pulling Kalisto's foot through the top of the pod. And
then they started mocking the.
It was beautiful. It was exactly what I wanted out of them. They are fantastic, and I think you're absolutely right about primetime players as well. I mean, they've got a great in-ring combo. I love the fact that Titus, as you say, is just complete powerhouse, tossing everyone around, and then Darren can pull off some really impressive looking stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That thing he does with the "I'm going to throw you in the air" and then knee you in the stomach
looks amazing
every time he does it.
Yeah, I love that move.
Yeah, he's great.
How many people here were very happy that the Ascension didn't win?
I don't know anything about the Ascension. Damn it!
I watched enough of them in NXT, but it was all squash. Like, that's all.
I saw them lose. The first thing I ever saw the Ascension was they lost their championships, and then they're on Raw, and I was like, oh, okay, and that's all I know about them. And then time they turn
they just
up,
get
they're
wrecked
just sort
every
of
time.
There. Yeah, they
got the best music. I love the music, but that's out of that.
I love their entrance. I actually really do like their entrance.
Yeah, yeah.
And they look cool. I mean, I like that sort of look, the LOD kind of look. But I was so terrified, because I'm so used to like WWE booking from like a year, 2 year, 3 years ago. When guys like that, you know, there's always a thing where you either get the belt because you deserve it and you know that they can take it to the next level, or there's people who need the belt to try to get over, and that never works. The belt never gets people over. But that's how the WWE used to operate, is that, oh, we need to get these guys over, put the belts on them, and then they'll be boring as shit. And that's sort of my concern with the Essentials. They were going to get the belts and try to get something out of it.
Yeah.
And they didn't. And I was very happy about that. I was very excited about that.
It's nice to have a tag division that I'm enjoying now. Because for a while, the tag division was, who's fighting the Usos? Couldn't give a toss because they're fighting the Usos. And now there's more to it. It feels like it's actually sort of stuff's happening in there now.
Mm-hmm. I know. I was happy last night because, Hilton mentioned, he was like, hey, you know what? I just realized there's no Usos anymore. And I'm like, oh, that's right. That's awesome. Oh, wait, it's because they're injured. They're going to be back. Injured, yeah. Womp, womp. Yeah.
When I got back into wrestling, which was probably about 4 or 5 months ago, and I started watching NXT, and I was watching the tag division because I always loved the tag division. When I stopped watching wrestling the last time was kind of towards the end of the Hardys, Dudleys, and Edge and Christian era, and the tag division was on fire. It was just wonderful. And then I watched some tag matches on NXT, and I look, the technical level here is great. The amount of interesting, innovative double-team stuff that they do, which really makes tag wrestling actually interesting, is through the roof. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. And then I actually caught the tail end of the Usos, basically, obviously, like Fastlane, WrestleMania. I'm like, this is really, really boring. And then Cesaro and Tyson Kidd come along, do some really, really cool stuff. Then the New Day come along, who aren't as technical, but they're incredibly amusing heels and really, really great on the mic, and that they consistently pissing off the crowd in every possible way they can, which is just lovely. And that got me really interested in it again. And then, of course, bringing the Lucha Dragons up helped a huge amount.
Oh, huge amount.
Yeah. Absolutely wonderful.
Callisto's ridiculous to watch. I love watching Callisto fight. Yeah. Oh, I love it.
Yeah. He's so, the tag division's at a great spot right now. I hope they sort of put Tyson and Cesaro back a little bit, because I have watched Tyson, Kidd, and Cesaro versus the New Day, I feel, about 20 times in the past 4 weeks.
They need something new, I agree.
Stop that. Like, I love Kidd and Cesaro. They're great.
Yeah.
But that's enough. Have them feud with the Ascension or something.
Yeah.
And have primetime players go feud with the New Day. That would be great.
Yeah.
And have them just cut the increasingly stupid offensive promos against each other. That'll be lovely. I mean, that's all primetime was doing before they came back a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, exactly.
And it was great. Yeah. It was fantastic.
Yeah, it was. It really was.
Okay.
Last match that we're going to talk about for Elimination Chamber. Of course. The World Heavyweight Champion. I was about to move on as well.
I was like, we're done
here.
Main
event.
We all want to talk about SummerSlam.
SummerSlam, yeah.
Right
now. Yeah. We're also anxious to talk about Undertaker. Yeah.
To talk about Leslie Nielsen's comedy.
So, Dan, you tweeted out during this match that you felt it was slower than it should be. And I agreed with you, but it made me wonder if it was just because I was so hungover from the Intercontinental Championship match.
I watched it. Oh, go ahead, Dan. Sorry.
Well, no, because we had Owen Cena was what Owen Cena peaked everything, and then from there it just sort of went. We won't get into that level.
Yes.
Because they had that, and then they had the thing, and then the step down, and then boom. Because that's what they do. They always have, like, great match, and then, like, a shitty one or two shitty ones, and then they go to the main event.
Like the palate cleanser, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't like that, because it just doesn't seem to... I just want the hype train to go, hey! I feel that would work better. But that was, actually, I'm playing a wrestling game where you actually manage the wrestling stuff. And there's one of the options is, do you want that to be the thing that works, or do you want to turn that off? Because that's apparently what all the brands do. Everybody does that. It's the match for the end is a thing. So it genuinely is a thing that people do. I had no idea. But yeah, it just felt kind of like, It did speed up after like the first 10, 15 minutes, but then it only had like a few minutes left after that. It just didn't feel like, they didn't feel like they were kicking the shit out of each other early enough. This is Dean Ambrose against Seth Rollins. Dean should be trying to bite his throat out. At all times.
It wasn't as physical as you thought it may have been. But I watched the main event this morning, separate from the rest of the show, and it didn't really seem slow unto itself. Maybe in comparison to the rest of the stuff, but it did start out a little slow, but towards the end where they started doing the sunset flips and the chains of pinning opportunities, and it really picked up after then.
It makes me wonder if these two guys know that they're gonna continue their feud for quite a spell. If there's any tell that Ambrose is gonna win the Money in the Bank, that might have been it, because it seems like they know that they're going to keep this going for a little while, and maybe they're saving the batshit stuff for the actual blow-off match.
Well, I was curious, since Ambrose has the belt now, if they're going to do a ladder match at Money in the Bank.
Oh, God.
It would be interesting. This popped in my head. Probably won't happen. If they have...
Larson's fantasy booking.
If they have the Money in the Bank match as the main event, if Ambrose Rollins precedes that, Ambrose somehow gets screwed, loses, enters himself into Money in the Bank.
I love it.
I don't want that, because that goes against my plan of Lesnar winning the Money in the Bank.
Because Lesnar's too big for
Lesnar
Money in the Bank.
He just show up and says, I want a title shot. Done.
No, because there's two bits of brilliance to this. One is, I really want to see Brock Lesnar climb a ladder. And two, I don't know if that'll work. It might happen. But two is, anytime Seth is like actually winning something, you play the music for a good 5 seconds, and then out comes Paul Heyman and just says, "So yeah." And then you just, but you could do that every week. And then like after like a random Raw every now and then, actually Brock runs out and kicks the shit out of Seth. So Seth gets like a Pavlovian response of like, "Oh my god, the music! Oh, it's Paul." And every now and then you can just bring Lesnar in to kick your head.
He turns into Theon from Game of Thrones. He just completely ends up a completely trash, tortured person. Yeah, I don't know. I think Brock would come out and just eat the ladder. I don't think he eats the ladder. I think he would eat it, and he'd suplex it, then eat it,
yeah,
and then eat everybody in the ring, and then eat Seth.
I'm just doing it to fuck with Seth. That's really all I'm doing it for.
I do love that idea.
Yeah, that is good.
I like the idea of, what if he wins the Money in the Bank, and he comes out at the end of every Seth match, he actually comes out, and he just beats the crap out of Seth and doesn't cash in. He just never cashes in.
He does it with the briefcase as well. Like, by the time he finally cashes it in, the briefcase is just in bits, you know?
Yeah, exactly. He just has the handle after that. Yeah, he's just carrying around the handle. He starts stabbing him in the head with it. And then he eats him. That's what he does. He eats everything. So, yeah, I don't know. I could see Lesnar winning. Although I'm thinking, we're still a ways off from the next WrestleMania. And Lesnar's going to wrestle at SummerSlam probably.
Yeah.
Does anybody here think that Lesnar's going to have the belt again? Or is he just going to go into special feuds?
I hope so. I love Lesnar as the belt. I think they need to, like I said, do it more, bring Paul out a lot more and be the voice of the belt and definitely talk him up while he's not there. But I'd love the belt on Lesnar, because he's just indestructible. He really is. That's the best person to have the belt, is the person who is the person who would kill you.
He's the most legitimate champion they have.
Yes,
he is. Yeah.
Yes.
To some degree,
I wonder if they're going to do that.
Some degree, I kind of disagree with that, just because the idea of Lesnar being this indestructible force and having the belt makes the matches, outside of watching Lesnar just destroy people, which is entertaining to watch in and of itself. Makes them a little bit less tense, because he's like, Lesnar's not going to lose to him. You know, it's either going to be some dirty win, some shenanigans, or he's just going to beat the crap out of him again. This is why I like Rollins having the belt, because he is a chicken shit heel, and he is being helped out by the Authority. And while he's a good enough wrestler, you can legitimately see him being beaten by like half the roster. So you're always wondering, will this guy manage it? Will there some shenanigans played?
Yeah,
there'll probably be some shenanigans. What will the shenanigans be? You know, that's what kind of interests me about it. Admittedly, they need to get away from the shenanigans being J&J interfere in some way, because that is
going to be... I know. Kane
slowly plods over to the ring and attempts the choke slam. No, but you're not allowed to choke slam people anymore. Yes, quick take off the shirts, but keep on the trousers, of course. We wouldn't want to be too much like Riff Raff, would we? But... I don't know. I mean, Lesnar's obviously amazing to watch. There's no doubt about that. I would certainly like to see him challenge for the title again, but I don't know if giving it back to him having another ridiculous reign would be great. I'd like to see someone else.
I want to see him going up against Owens. I want to see that match. I want to see Owens built as a fucking machine, and then WrestleMania is Lesnar versus Owens. You wouldn't have a front row for that match. Everybody just walk backwards. We're just going to get a little bit of safety.
It's like the first three rows will get wet, right? You know?
Yeah.
It's just blood everywhere.
It's like a Gallagher show.
Or it's like, man, there's like these local, you know, the local shows, the wrestling shows that they do here in like high school gymnasiums. And it's like, you always know, these guys, we're not really going to trust that they know what they're doing. And so whenever they had, I remember, Larson, I think we went to this, they had a bring your own weapons match.
Yeah.
And so, like, the crowd brought stuff to be weapons. And so, like, the wrestlers would be using this random crap that people would bring. And then I think didn't they have some light tubes?
They might have. Yeah.
I think they did. And when I saw that, I was like, we brought my my 10-year-old stepkid, and I was like, okay, we're gonna go back away. We went to the very back of
the opposite corner of the high school gym. Yeah.
Because they started to go all over the place, and we're like, okay, we're gonna get all the way back here, be near an exit, because these guys are like. Maybe they might have like 3 weeks of training in. And like
let me just make sure my gun's loaded. Okay.
We're yeah, good. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So that, yeah. And that's how Lesnar owns would be. It's just, let's just back away because we don't want to be collateral damage. So that takes us into NXT Unstoppable Takeover Unstoppable. Yes. This was every single one of these. I kind of like that are these quarterly? These are quarterly,
yeah, they're
right?
Quarterly, yeah. I believe. Yeah.
I kind of like that at this point because it gives so much buildup, and it treats it. We'll get to this a little bit later, but I noticed this also with SummerSlam 94. There was a promo for the next pay-per-view, which was Survivor Series, which was 3 months away, and it was a big deal.
Yeah.
And now we're hearing that there's the possibility that the special events, the pay-per-views, which are now special events, are like Money in the Bank is 2 weeks away.
2 weeks.
And
we'll be there. It'll be fun.
On one hand, I kind of like that for the WWE from Maine, because if the writing staff feels that, hey, you know what, we can jam a lot more in. We can every 2 weeks we have something special to build to, as opposed to four weeks of the Authority coming out every night on Raw, yapping away, and that's their build. It's much more just dense in 2 weeks of buildup. But there's something to be said about a 3 month wait to really build and make these things special for NXT. And I think just the buildup to Unstoppable when Kevin Owens comes out, and meanwhile they're touring. Or not touring necessarily, but yeah, I think they've been doing they're touring
then,
a bit here
and then
there.
And then Sami Zayn shows up on Raw.
Up on Raw, exactly.
Dislocates his arms, just spinning his arms around. Or something.
As usual, both the most injury-prone people I've ever seen. Jesus.
Yeah, he was before he got in, wasn't it? He was like shaking his arms around, and that's how he injured himself.
Yes, apparently.
Before he even got in the ring with Cena. He completely
it's made of paper,
let me ask
guy.
That's one of the dangers, I think, though, of, okay, Owens has been around for 15 years on the indie circuit doing, the Ring of Honor shit where you have pile drivers every two moves. That's like your starting move. Sami Zayn's been around probably the same amount of time. He's got infinite finishers on 2K15 or 14 or whatever. And it makes you wonder, like, these guys, like, kind of like Daniel Bryan. He was there for a long time. He finally makes his way up to the big time. He main events, puts everything he has into it, he's done. And who knows if he's done, but smart money might be that he's done. Owens has already had knee problems.
Yep.
Bringing these guys up after 15 years of the indies makes me wonder how much of a shelf life the future of the WWE main event scene is really going to have.
Especially when they're working 250, 300 days a year as opposed to,
Right.
indie bookings here and there like they're used to.
Makes me wonder how good of a plan this is. But I'll enjoy it while I have it, I guess. Oh, yeah. I don't know. What are your guys' thoughts?
Well, Baron Corbin apparently doesn't have much tread on his tires, so we can look forward to him.
Well, he's in the developmental division for a reason.
Developmental.
Yeah, I mean,
I feel like he's going to be there for a little while, too.
It's why I'm not worried about him, and I'm not worried about Dana Brooke either, because ultimately, yes, they're not that great right now for all sorts of different reasons. Dana needs to learn how to not touch herself every 2 seconds. But outside of that, it's like, look, they're in the developmental division. Let them develop. It's fine. I think Corbin's getting a little bit better. I think putting him against Rhino is a good idea, putting him into slightly longer matches. And letting him learn from someone that obviously knows what they're doing is a great idea. Admittedly, I'm kind of sick of the end of days being as deadly a move as it is. It's getting a little bit silly. I'm waiting to see who actually kicks out of it first. And I would have thought Rhino might have been the guy to do it, but apparently not. I think you're right in terms of the going back to the whole idea of how spread out the takeovers are. It works for NXT. And what works for NXT doesn't necessarily work for the main roster.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That's been proven.
The last few pay-per-views or special events have been pretty good. I mean, if this is any indication of what's to come, if Money in the Bank is equally good, I was surprised at how good Elimination Chamber was, then sure, have a special event every 2 weeks. Fine by me. Yeah. You know, it's like you said, it's there's so much content for them to have to fill on a weekly basis. Raw is so padded, and SmackDown is SmackDown, and they don't even get me started on the other two little things. But NXT always feels like they cram so much into an hour that they really need the time to really properly build the storylines up, and especially since they're trying to develop people. And if they're going to develop people, they need that time to really get the storylines going. So it seems to work.
I was surprised. The vaudevillains, who I like their thing.
They're
I like their gimmick. They're fun. They're in a dark match at a TakeOver. I mean, there is a lot of people. You're right. It is sort of being dominated right now by, you know, the sort of four horsewomen, as they call them, Owens, Samoa Joe now, the tag team champ, which Blake and Murphy. What's your guys' thoughts on Blake and Murphy? I was really hoping. I love. And I want to see him on Main sooner than later, even though they might not be ready for it. Enzo Amore, Colin Cassidy, and Carmella. Oh, my. These guys are ECW, early ECW incarnate. This is what early ECW, their personality, they fit so perfectly. They have the crowd in the palm of their hands. They may not be the most technically proficient wrestlers, but oh my God, the amount of charisma just in Enzo Amore's little finger, his dirty, creepy little finger, is immense. I love those guys, and I wanted them so bad to get the belts, but again, Blake and Murphy seem like the type. They need the belts to get over because I just don't. I don't see it with them.
They're not bad in the ring, Blake and Murphy. They just don't seem to have a whole lot of charisma.
They have zero charisma.
That's almost why I think the story works, because everyone obviously so blatantly wants Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy
to get the belts. Yeah.
And they're deliberately saying no because the dubstep douchebags are going to be in your way and they're going to constantly screw them over. And that's turning them into heels in a really, really big way. Plus, of course, the beatdowns and the whole no means no thing they're currently doing is working fairly well for them, I think. So, I mean, in terms of their storyline development, they were boring as hell. They're now becoming interesting for kind of all the wrong reasons, but simultaneously that's why they're good heels.
The little backstage thing they did a couple weeks ago, and I think it was to lead up to this feud.
Yeah, it was.
When Blake and Murphy tried to hit on Carmella, had just the most porny vibe like they come over and they saunter over like porn guys.
Well, they both kind of look like Val Venus.
They both look like porn guys.
The funny thing about that is that if had that been done in, say, the Attitude Era, it probably would have been the case if they would have got the girl, because that's kind of how the Attitude Era worked. Now it's this weird thing where, hey, it's 2015, you can't do that to a woman, no means no. Actually works. You know?
And, yeah, it does. It totally does.
It does. I like them on that basis. You know, I think they wouldn't have been exceptional if they weren't doing that, but their backstage development and their on-mic stuff and what they're doing outside of the ring is helping them out a lot.
Yeah, again, like you say, it's developmental, and that's sort of what they're there for. The dubstep, is it just me? Have they dialed it down from like a month ago, the dubstep thing? Because when they came out this time, it didn't seem as overbearing as like a month ago. The camera just kept on zooming in on like their big screen thing, the Titantron, whatever they call it. And then like the dubstep just seemed really, I don't know, maybe it was
they
just maybe
changed
I had the volume
the track.
Down Did they?
I mean, it's hard to tell because it's dubstep, but they did actually. Yeah.
Where were these guys in 2011? Why are they doing this now?
It's part of the heel, man. It's all part of the thing.
I guess they're playing
dubstep, so they make us hate them even more. It's brilliant.
I really hope the backstage were like, okay, we want you guys to be like heels, douchebags. What do you want to do? Okay, we have to have dubstep. Dubstep has to be here. Maybe you're right. I'd love to think that.
I hope so. They're sitting there right now going, we like dubstep. I know.
Sorry, everybody.
Why are you so
everybody's tuning
down there.
Actually, really nice guys when you get to know us, you know.
Yeah, exactly. I love Carmella too. God, she's great. And
she's getting
she
great.
Used to be like, I think she was like a Laker girl or like a Patriot. She was a cheerleader.
Yeah, she
like
was.
In the NFL and NBA, I believe. And she's just got so much fucking charisma. Like, she cut a promo on those guys herself a couple weeks ago. Oh, and she had the audience eaten out of her hand. It was absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, we need that. We need them to stay together. Although, I thought of a great idea. If you ever put one of them up to Raw, you could run a great almost Home Alone story with the one that stays behind. Just he comes out, and he just like this, he leaves pauses where the other one should be talking. And you just waiting around. He's always just perfectly timed, and then
You can't teach that. Yeah. And then he just waits there for like 2 minutes
for Big Cass to spell soft,
and the crowd do it at the right time. And he's like,
they're all on autopilot.
Yeah. They're definitely gonna need a little bit more time though, because let's be honest, Enzo Amore's finisher is currently tagging Big Cass. So I think it's getting better. Like I remember being really impressed. I think it was this one. His standing drop kick. He had a lot of height on it. Like he really pulled that off quite nicely. I think he's really learning. He did a really crisp. I think it was a tornado DDT off the top rope that looked absolutely beautiful. So he's getting there. I think he really is. You know, he's got to get to the point where he doesn't have to rely on Big Cass to do everything. But it works, you know. And again, they're just amazing on the mic, so why not?
Story-wise, though, that could actually work if that's a thing where he relies on Colin to be, like you said, his own personal finisher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, that's actually kind of, that could actually work for, like, a storyline thing where he has to fend for himself. Like Dan said, Home Alone type thing. And it's only Enzo. That could be a great way to develop him a little bit more further. And that could be fun. I like those guys. I think they're fantastic. They're really
absolutely
good. Let's see here. And then, of course, Finn Balor. Is Tyler Breeze ever going to – is he ever going to go – he's been around forever. Is he ever going to Maine or what? I don't know.
Do you think it would work up there?
It seems a little Adam Rose.
It does. I'm pulling for him to do something. Like, I always feel bad when the guy who seems to be working really hard, it just gets, like, sort of lapped by everybody else that they're starting to bring in. Like, Finn Balor is now the number one contender. And I love, Larson, I know you're kind of lukewarm on his entrance. I'm all in with you. I love that entrance. I think it's fantastic.
I want a slight direction tweak on it. I want them to, when he's crawling in stuff, do almost like shaky cam blurry from a distance so you never quite see what he is. So it's more horror movie style. If you don't know what's coming out of the thing. And then when he reveals, you get the nice clear shot of him. But you do a bit more sort of like slightly wonkier angles and a bit shaky cam as he's coming through. So you just have the
kind of found footage style.
Yeah, exactly. Just have the sort of...
That's what we need, a found footage wrestling mat. I don't know how that'd work. That'd be great, though.
I think we did that like that. That was the Attitude Era with Stone Cold just stunning cameramen. That's the closest we've ever got to
that's
that.
That's right. That's right. Yeah.
Are you sure TNA hasn't tried a found footage?
That's right. They're a found footage promotion. What am I thinking?
I'm pretty sure there was WCW that had a wrestling match in a graveyard at one point that was kind of like that. And there was,
that sounds right.
Outside of the bit where they made it almost obvious that there was some kind of rape angle going on with it. It was like,
God.
It was just, what is going on?
WCW at the turn of the century. That's what they were doing. I don't know. I like Finn Balor. I wish he would get a new finisher.
Yeah.
Because it looks like it's just a recipe for rolling his ankle.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's just, he steps on somebody. I don't know that's a finisher.
Especially when he does the big demon entrance thing.
Yeah.
It's not a finisher that fits that character at all.
Yeah. You would prefer he literally rips somebody's head off.
Yeah.
That's kind of what demons do.
If he's a demon.
Yeah. If he's a demon, yeah.
Just starts not gnawing on his arm or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. And then he just taps out.
That would be quite a submission.
Yeah.
Just bite your arm off. Yeah, that would be
good. Oh, that's the angle. He's a cannibal, huh?
He tries to tap out, but his arm's already gone. So it's like, damn it.
His nub is tapping.
Gets in an I Quit match with Cena. Bites his arm off. He's like, do you want to quit? No. Like his bloody arm's off. What?
Cena just holds up his towel with one arm. Never gives up.
His towel. I hate that towel. God, I hate that towel so much.
The sad thing is I could see that happening as well. It's like,
know,
the
it's
ultimate underdog. God. Big match John never quits. He's missing limbs.
Actually, if you cut Cena there, it would actually say never give up, like a stick of rock you get at the seaside. It's in his blood, damn it. It's in his blood.
It's literally in his blood.
Yeah, it's literally in his blood. God. I want to give up so bad, but I just can't. It's a new angle for Cena. He's possessed by a being who won't give up.
Oh,
I also
God.
Did love, I was talking to Larson about this when Hideo Itami, when they explained his injury as like a parking lot beatdown. Again, yeah. sort of shades of WCW back in the day.
Yeah.
But cute. Then Kevin Owens comes out and he just walks past. And they mess this up two ways. Number one, he should have had like a Subway footlong. Because for some reason that just fits with Kevin Owens. Like, he'll go to Subway because it's supposed to be healthier, but he'll get the footlong, which obviously isn't.
And he'll get the spicy Italian, which is like the worst thing for you of all the footlong.
And a large Coke, you know.
And a large Coke, exactly. And then they're like, Kevin, that's terrible for you. Well, it's Subway. And then when he walks by, he says, oh, that's a shame. And we really could have used the Seinfeld stinger right after that. Oh, that's a shame.
Subway idea gets me. That's the perfect lead up to his feud with Brock Lesnar. You
know, it is, yeah.
Sponsor versus sponsor. Which sandwich will prevail?
Oh, yeah, Jimmy
John's.
That's
right. Jimmy John's sandwiches and Subway. That'd be perfect.
Ideal.
I see that.
No.
Let's see here. And then there was the, let's see here. There was the, we'll go ahead. We'll talk about the women's match first, which was everybody was raving about it.
Yeah,
fantastic
it was great.
Match.
Oh,
great.
So good.
Fantastic match. I like Becky Lynch's new look, too. She has kind of like a steampunk adventure thing.
She's Magic the Gathering now.
Love.
Yeah. It's perfect. It works. Because she didn't really have a look prior to that, did she? The first NXT match, she came out as literally a dancing leprechaun, which was the worst thing in the universe. And then,
I like that they used that in her sort of angle, too. She was like, I felt like I sold out. I like that. That's really good.
Absolutely. But, she has a look now. She has a defined look. Mm-hmm. Whereas before, she felt like the fourth wheel. On a, I suppose it would be a tricycle, wouldn't it? The fourth wheel on a tricycle. It's like, we know what Bayley is. Sasha's got everything defined down. Charlotte's just the big genetic monster. And here's Becky Lynch. She wrestles sometimes. But now they've definitely done... For the last few months, like, they built her so quickly, which I'm really impressed by. Like, she really was just like a hanger-on prior to that. And I'm really impressed by that. And she's developed so, so well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I like her. I like her through and through. I think, and you're right, she got a great look for herself now. This is a fantastic match. And this really, I mean, I like that they're teasing, they're planning, at least on the touring thing, at least, maybe at the next pay-per-view or the next special event, whatever it is, that they could have a women's match as the main event. I think that'd be great.
Absolutely.
I'm not sure if they're going to do it or not with Samoa Joe coming in.
Yeah.
But I loved, I loved the match. I thought it was great. Everybody was raving about it.
It was superb. And it had the best bit of commentary of the night on it, which is when she comes out on the commentators and went, have you seen The Fifth Element? Why? That's a good question.
Well, speaking of commentary, I love Corey Graves.
Yeah, he's great.
I want them to replace Michael Cole with him. I know he's not technically like a play-by-play guy necessarily, but I think he can
neither is
the one.
Michael Cole.
Neither is Michael Cole. Exactly
so
right.
Michael Cole is very, very good at plugging the WWE network. I'll give him that. You know, he's exceptional at it. And Mountain Dew Kickstart, of course. But outside of that, I'm not really sure what he's up to. I like the fact that Corey Graves clearly has this sort of teenage crush on Becky Lynch because she keeps taking the piss out of her in just these weird snarky ways. Which I think that's just kind of cute. It's just a little element to the commentary.
It is, you know, NXT is very much like watching a high school drama, you know, like but like one where everybody has lots of charisma and you're really kind of invested in it.
Yeah.
Yes. So not like a high school drama then.
Right. Not like exactly. It's like early Beverly Hills 90210, not later 90210.
It's weird that like bits of NXT are just so much better than like Raw and stuff. So what I'm thinking is NXT needs developmental. Like, we need a third one, because it's like homeopathy. If we just get more and more developmental, it'll just get better and better. Up until the point where we're just, like, in the street going, hey, want to be a wrestler? Here's £5, get in that ring and see what happens. And that'll be amazing. And then the feuds with, like, guy who just went to Argos versus guy who's just standing over there. Oh.
Versus Blue Pants in a triple play.
On commentary, Betty, this old lady we found.
What am I doing here? So oh, you're great.
Well, it's certainly better than Michael Cole. Oh, just, more
and
exciting
it's all
than
better
Sexton.
Than Cole.
Yep.
Exactly.
That's what we need. We need NXT's NXT. Calling it now,
that
was the next thing.
It is weird, isn't it, that NXT's got to the point. Me and the wife genuinely look forward to NXT every week. It's like the highlight of the week. It's we never miss an episode. We've gone back and we started from 2014, just plowing through it, which is equally good. And then Raw's become the NXT of NXT, which is strange. Yeah. Well, I guess we can watch Raw as well then. I mean, you know, it'll fill some time. It's almost watching Superstars or Sunday Night Heat.
I just watch NXT in the pay-per-views, and it's great. Because, Raw is just, it's because it's 3 hours long. I don't have that time every week.
The silly thing is that they pad a lot of it out with promos of stuff you've already bloody seen and recaps. But then they recap the recaps. It's why I stopped watching, because I love the mid-card. I really do. But I can't stand watching Superstars knowing there's going to be 15 minutes of wrestling and 45 minutes of recap from Raw that I've already bloody seen. And then it's the same bloody thing with the pay-per-views as well, because they recap everything in the pre-show, and then they recap everything in the bloody main show. And they show the exact same thing twice. Mm-hmm. And it's getting to the point of like, look, I watch all of your product and I'm feeling like I want to watch less of it because you keep recapping it. And that's surely not your goal.
That's the joy. That's the joy. You just watch the pay-per-views without ever seeing it. That's because they're so good at making the little packages before it, you don't actually need to watch anything. They can actually do a pay-per-view set in a parallel universe just out of the blue with different storylines. And just the packages that set all this random shit up. Just have if ever's going to land on the 1st of April, just have a parallel universe pay-per-view with just everything goes out of the... Everyone's got different gimmicks. Everything's completely different.
If they start doing this stuff every 2 weeks, that'd be that's a great pitch. Like, just one of those. One of those, because it's what, like, 52 or like 20 some odd...
26 of them a year.
26 a year. One of them can be that idea. That's a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, they could even do something ridiculous. Like have Undertaker versus Undertaker. Not that.
That's just way too ridiculous.
You wouldn't want a 3 month wait after that, would you?
Speaking of which, it's time for a perfect segue.
Well, you don't want to talk about Samoa Joe coming out?
We can talk about Samoa Joe. I loved his shirt.
Yeah.
He has a great shirt. Samoa Joe is one of those guys that also goes against, that sort of defies my expectation of sort of the chunky guy who I can't believe. I was anti-Rusev when he came out because I was like, hey, he's kind of got man boobs, not into that. And then Kevin Owens came out. I'm like, hey, he just looks like a really fatter version of me. But I'm behind both those guys now. And Samoa Joe, I had this problem with him back in TNA. And then I saw him wrestle. I'm like, holy crap, this guy's kind of cool. So I was really excited when he came out. He has a really, really cool shirt. Mm-hmm. It sounds like, I mean, I don't know what their plans are for Kevin Owens, but something tells me Samoa Joe's going to have that belt sooner than later.
I'm curious, since the next NXT event is scheduled, I would think, for August. That'd be 3 months later, right? Mm-hmm. So if Owens is booked on Raw at least through August, would they book Owens on Raw to be super strong, only to have him lose the belt to Samoa Joe on the next NXT TakeOver?
Again, I mean, talk about a good way to further legitimize the NXT promotion.
Or, you know, if Owens is on Raw semi-weekly, have Samoa Joe show up, I guess. And have
he was sort of alluding to that when he was talking about his contract.
Yeah.
They were asking, you know, whoever wrestling market was asking him, you know, what's your contract? Like, are you going to show up on Main? And he was like, well, my contract is interesting because I'm signed to NXT, but there's a lot of wiggle room for other possibilities, which is great because it's like, there's this level. And it's the closest thing that I can think of to relate this to is the Monday Night Wars. When we would tune in specifically to see who's jumping over week to week, that was the big thing. Oh my God, this guy's over here. And honestly, like within a week, it was like old news and it was like, okay, now he's here. Who cares? But it was that level that the unpredictability of who's going to show up. We saw it with Sami Zayn in the U.S. Open. Holy shit. Much bigger holy shit moment with Kevin Owens, him showing up. I love this sort of thing of unpredictability where we don't know who's going to be jumping ship. I love that. That's great.
Yep. Agreed.
There is a slight problem, though. You see, when Samoa Joe appeared for the first time, I thought it was Taz because I didn't know what it was. I don't know who Samoa Joe is. It was like they played Godzilla's music and then Taz came out and I was like, it's Taz, what the fuck? But apparently they're like, it's Samoa Joe, and I was like, okay.
there is an element of NXT that kind of rewards complete and total nerds like me and Larson that are just way too into it. know far too much. Like, we both have families and they're neglected because we know too much about wrestling. It's just, it's horrible. But yeah, I mean, there is, and I think that the NXT crowd, I mean, you have to be a mark to go there every single week. You have to know about all that stuff.
It caters to the hardcore fan.
Definitely. It does cater to the hardcore fan. But then, you know, as sort of, I guess, a casual or whatever you want to call it. I mean, we're doing a wrestling podcast, so you guys are hardly casual fans. but there has to be that sort of element also is, oh, my God, the crowd is marking out. The announcers are marking out. I don't know who this is, but it's kind of big that they're marking out. So maybe that's the effect they're going for also.
Yeah,
that's exactly how I felt, really. And I didn't know a damn thing about this guy. I'd been reading the wrestling subreddits and things like that, and I'd heard murmurings about something involving Samoa Joe. I'm like, apparently I should care about Samoa Joe because they're telling me I should care about Samoa Joe. And then out he comes, intimidates the crap out of Kevin Owens, who's monster heel at this point. So it's like, oh, he intimidated the crap out of Kevin Owens. And he also looks like, you know, he got into a fight with a giant bulldog and, you know, lost the fight but came out stronger in the end of it. You know, I mean, this guy looks like he's been through the
wars.
He's
a Saiyan. That's what's happened,
Looks like he's been through the wars. He's perfect. Why not? You know, and I love the fact NXT is like, we don't care about the look. We care about how well you bloody well wrestle, and we're going to have you in here, and you're going to come out in your t-shirt looking like you've been mauled by a dog, and you're going to beat the crap out of people, and it's going to be great to watch.
Yeah.
And I thought it was Taz.
And I'd have been okay if it was Taz. Yeah.
I would have been just fine with that. I love Taz. I hope, man. Talk about, because he just left TNA. That's a fucking disaster over there.
Oh,
and I'm hoping that he lands some sort of role in some sort of on camera role, because I love Taz's commentary. We talked about this when we did a book of the match on ECW One Night Stand. Mm-hmm. Dan, you really appreciated his commentary.
Oh, great,
It was great. I love Taz. He's a great character. Always seems like a decent guy. So that would be great if it was Taz, but it was Samoa Joe. I love his shirt. I want to get a shirt, but apparently it's on back order right now. I do like yesterday on Twitter, Kevin Owens tweeted out, I'm getting prepared for the biggest match of my career. If you want to buy my shirts, go here. it's a link to his WWE shop. What a mark. That's great.
Oh, I like that.
Okay. SummerSlam 1994. I have notes that I told you guys earlier before we started rolling. I watched this like 3 weeks ago. And so I have notes that I don't even know if they make sense. I have.
Well, here's the thing: you can read your notes, and we can try to decode them.
I like that. Well, a mini imitation game right now. We'll do. Let's see here. First of all, Macho Man relegated to hosting. 5 months later, he was gone in WCW wrestling, and I think he had a really good time in WCW because he did not like. Apparently, he did not like having to move aside for the. We got a new generation.
I don't think he necessarily didn't like moving aside. He thought he still had a role to play in the transition of the company.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to do that feud with HBK, that big 2-year feud that eventually would have put HBK over. So I don't think he had a problem moving aside. It was just how it was done.
Yeah, which was just like, okay, you're done wrestling. I think he came back from injury and his spot was gone.
Vince said, you're not wrestling anymore. You're doing commentary with me.
We've got a new generation now. Oh, yeah. Anyways. Macho Man was hosting. Leslie Neal. This I remember clear as day because Leslie Nielsen seemed to show up every fucking 2 seconds. My only disappointment with the fact that Leslie Nielsen was there promoting the Naked Gun was that O.J. Simpson was not there. Because this was before he started killing people. And he wasn't there. Maybe he was off killing people.
He was busy.
He was already busy stabbing people.
Takes a lot of time at your daily schedule, that.
It really does, if you think about it. He was getting his lawyers together.
As we
should be. Todd Pettengill. He's in Sacramento now, Larson.
Really?
He was the little smarmy. He was the Michael Cole-looking guy.
Yeah, I know who he is.
Yeah. He had earrings and a mullet.
What is he doing in Sacramento?
Apparently, he's a radio host out here for a radio station we don't listen to.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, that's what it said on Wikipedia anyways. So he was crappy.
He was never good. I don't know why he ever did that.
There was a good woman's match. I have that written here.
Yeah, that woman's match was great.
from what I understand, Alundra Blaze, Medusa, she ages backwards. She looked older then than she did at her Hall of Fame speech, where she looked banging. She looked great at her Hall of Fame speech, and she looked like a school mom back during SummerSlam 94.
It's not a lot of aging, but okay. It's about aging very slowly.
Yeah. She just ages much slower than everybody else.
1994 was 83 years ago now. God, think about that for a second.
Nash's Diesel promos were terrible.
Oh, they were awful.
There seemed to be a huge leap between him as Diesel and him coming to WCW.
Yeah.
Because he was so cartoony, which probably is what Vince wanted. And then when he was in the NWO, he was like completely natural. And it makes me wonder what the why that changed for him.
Well, this was also 2 years before that. So maybe he just kind of grew as a performer, too.
Yeah, that could be.
Every time I see a Razor Ramon match from this era, it blows my mind that he wasn't bigger. Because everybody loved him.
He got pop. The crowd loved Razor Ramon.
At one point, the crowd also loved IRS. IRS got a lot of cheers.
Where did this match take place?
Chicago, I want to say.
Oh, was it Chicago? Okay.
Yeah, Chicago.
IRS reminds me of Corporate Kane, actually, thinking about it. I wrote down their current Kane. I actually much prefer Kane to now come out as just current Kane. He's just whatever he fancies that day. That's what we need. He's just doing
he should come out as Kane in his insurance company commercial.
I know. I was doing some research for last week's episode on Kane. I found the Facebook page for the Jacobs Insurance Agency out of Knoxville, Tennessee. And it's fantastic because there's nothing about it that indicates Kane runs it. And then you scroll down, and you see a picture of Kane, corporate Kane, with a bunch of guys in suits. And one of them has a wrestling belt. And it says, congratulations to Lexus of Knoxville for being the champion of selling cars or something like that.
Yeah. And the only difference between insurance Kane and corporate Kane is he was wearing, I think, a tan suit instead of his dark blue or black suit he wears on Raw. Otherwise, he's the exact same thing.
He needs a red suit. He needs a middle ground. He needs a nice red suit with a black shirt and red tie to come out almost Satan-y. You know, just come out and be like, yes, good evening. With a red trilby.
The dentist back. It'll be more interesting than his current character.
I like when him and Rollins, I don't know, I know I'm like probably the odd man out here, I can guarantee it, but I like when him and Rollins go at it and everybody starts questioning Kane. I mean, I know it happens all the time, but people question Kane's sort of manhood.
Yeah, I'm with you there. Corporate Kane's great.
I love that. And I'm hoping they just don't make that like, or they have kind of made it a thing that doesn't have a blow off. I want to see a blow off for that, where he finally dons that mask again just to kill somebody. Like the last guy who just shows up and says, oh, you're just his lackey. And he's like, fine. He takes his mask out of his back pocket, tosses it on, and starts chokeslamming people.
Can we have the old Jay mask back, security. Though, instead of that one? This one makes him look like he's 80 years old.
He needs a new mask. A new mask with a tie, so he can remember his origins.
let's just take Kane back to fake Diesel.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's see here.
So that's what we need. No, we need to do the same thing that they did with Undertaker here. We need a fake Kane, like the old Kane, to turn up. And come Kane, like, what the fuck is this? And then they have a feud, and then Kane has to become the monster again to fight off this fake one, who can then take off his mask and reveal to, I don't know, IRS. I don't care. That's unimportant.
IRS.
Book it.
Bo Dallas.
Yeah, Bo Dallas. It's Bray Wyatt. Hey. Who takes off his mask, and he's Bo Dallas. Never seen the two of them in the same room, even though they're brothers.
I like my notes here for the Owen Hart versus Bret Hart match, which is actually, the cage match is actually really good. That was sort of, I guess.
It was long, but it was pretty good.
It was long, yeah. But it was decent. I mean, you're trying to find something out of this to appreciate.
I like the wobbly blue cage. It was so wobbly.
Yeah.
Okay. That was one of the things I vividly remember about this, especially because it's Owen and you're scared half the time. They showed one quick close-up, like a cutaway, of the cage, of like one little portion of the cage, and there was a lot of blue tape happening there.
Yeah.
like literally this thing looked like it's taped together. Yeah. And they confirmed it by going a close up and you see blue electric tape.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Yeah.
And then of course every time Owen climbs the ring I start to get scared.
Aww. Yeah. I much prefer that design because you can see a lot more through it because it's a much mm-hmm. bigger sort of gap and stuff. But yeah, it looks a lot easier to climb, but it looks terrifying as all hell just because it looks like sort of a fair, like one of those fairgrounds that turns up a roller coaster that they bring along mm-hmm. and just set up in your local park. And you know somebody is going to die on that via tetanus or falling, and you don't know which one it's going to be. But it's going to be one of those two.
It's either going to be a rusty nail or someone falling.
Or a goose to the face, like Fabio. But
I also noticed that Owen came out, his music sounded like generic pay-per-view music from the 90s.
It probably was.
I know, but didn't he have his own music? Or was that his gimmick? Every pay-per-view, he would come out to the music of that pay-per-view.
Of that pay-per-view? It could be.
I have no idea. This is why I have used. You have the knowledge.
I know.
I'm just sitting here annoying people by moving so much.
another thing that sort of... where was I here? Oh,
Undertaker. Let's talk about that.
That cage did scare the shit out of me because there was a couple times I think where they would sort of get their legs trapped in it. It seemed like just so many broken limbs could happen using that cage.
Yeah. That's probably why they changed it. Health and safety.
I have this one note here, which is weird. It says Owen glitched through the cage in his loss.
He got his leg stuck
and then dangles back.
Is that what happens? Okay.
Yeah. Exactly what you were just talking about. Yeah, he gets stuck in it and then once his face jumps off, it just lands.
And then it was odd. Bret Hart got a huge pop. I never know why that guy got a big pop.
I don't know either. He was
IRS boring. Got a pop. We don't know 1994. It was a different place. It was a different time.
It was a different era.
Different world.
They always say also that Bret Hart was supposed to be one of the best technical wrestlers ever. Every one of his matches looks the exact same. Everyone.
Well, that's why he's the best technical wrestler. He's able to replicate it time and time
again.
There you go.
Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, technically, he's the best wrestler. Yeah. That's the way I'm saying. Miscommunication there, but slight one.
All right. So let's get to it.
Let's talk about Undertaker versus Undertaker.
Yeah, let's talk about some great technical wrestling.
Fucking 8 hours. 8 hours of build-up. I've seen the Undertaker. He was...
Fine, you know, it's better than the actual match, so I don't mind that too much.
And much longer.
I'll have 20 minutes of Paul Bearer going, instead of watching that bloody thing again.
But it was so much better because this guy who was apparently dressing up Return to the Undertaker never took the costume off, apparently, and just would like go and visit Mount Rushmore or buy groceries just dressed as the Undertaker. Like, that's clearly what was happening. Oh, I'm an insurance salesman and the Undertaker came and bought insurance from me. He's like, really? What did he sign his name as? Fake Undertaker. Oh. And why wasn't he called the Underfaker? Come on. Seriously. The name's there. It's obvious. Yeah, that build-up, that was the best bit of the whole pay-per-view. That build-up, people going, oh, yeah, it's just school children. We saw the Undertaker in the playground.
Yeah, it cuts to the guy in the deli sandwich shop. Yeah. And then the camera pans over, and there's a baby Kevin Owens there waiting in line for his footlong.
Waiting for a spicy Italian.
I saw the Undertaker in here. He was Yeah, it was really bad.
I wasn't watching it with sound on because we were recording or preparing to record
because
the podcast.
It was an hour ago.
But I just saw a huge mess of tombstone pile drivers.
Yeah. Yeah,
they were apparently doing to each other, but I didn't get the commentary. What was
it was
going
making
on there.
Sure he was dead because otherwise making sure he didn't sit up again
because
that's the Undertaker's
because fake
thing.
Undertaker is so powerful.
Undertaker, yes, with his ginger beard and his 5'11". When they go face to face and he's just down here and he's like, yeah, this isn't...
With his 4-inch lifts in his boots.
If this had some ambiguity at all as to which was the real Undertaker, then maybe the crowd wouldn't have all left as the match started. But yeah,
let's be frank, I think they would have anyway because the whole premise was ridiculous. And what's stupid about it is it was clearly Vince's dumb idea, and yet Vince on commentary completely failed to sell it in any way. it was your stupid idea in the first place. Come on, at least put some effort into it.
Some of the stuff he was saying, like, I actually wrote something down. This capacity crowd is in awe. It's just completely silent.
They were in awe of the flashlight that they hid inside the urn and spun around for about 2 minutes.
I just imagine Batman comes down. You called? Oh, crap.
Nope.
Okay, sorry.
No, that's on the next pay-per-view.
No. Batman versus The Undertaker.
WCW had RoboCop. We'll get Batman.
We'll get Batman.
This is a very
Triple H comes out in his Terminator outfit. Perfect.
They should use the Ascension to advertise Mad Max. But anyway, right. Yeah, that was the other one. You can hear the silence of this crowd. They're stunned. Yes, they are, Vince.
Yes.
They very much were stunned.
It's not in the way that you thought.
I just like, you know what I appreciate about the behind the scenes thing? Is that this is the kind of, okay, so they did fake Diesel and fake Razor after this because they left. This wasn't like a contract negotiation, like necessity thing. This wasn't like
was hurt.
This isn't like, we're gonna show him for wanting to go over to WCW. No, this was, hey, Undertaker is hurt. He's going to be back in a couple months, but I've got a great idea. In the meantime, we'll do a fake one.
Yeah. Well, we've already set up current time for Sting, because there was the fake Sting when they were setting Sting. Oh, there was a guy who was playing Sting. We can now have two Stings. A pair of Stings.
That's right.
Stangs?
Yeah.
That's true.
Stongs.
Well, at least he wore face paint, so it was a little bit more convincing, you know?
Just has a ginger beard over the face.
It's blatantly obvious to everybody.
It's just horns.
Well, it was really funny when the fake Undertaker had the Phantom of the Opera mask he was wearing for a while.
Yeah.
God.
I just looked it up too. Surprisingly, fake Undertaker still alive.
Hey.
Oh, Brian Lee's still alive.
Brian Lee is still alive. I thought he was dead too. I thought for a second I thought it was Brian Clark who was Crush and a couple other people, but he's dead.
Yeah.
But Brian Lee is still very much alive. He's 48 years old.
That's Brian Lee,
and he's in Florida right now.
He's last
right now. You know exactly where he is. Man, Google's getting fucking creepy.
He's currently a regular for NWA Southern All Star Wrestling. He's 48, still wrestling.
Good grief! Good luck to him. As fake Undertaker, hey!
That'd be great if that's true. If that's true. Dan and TB, you're both coming out here to go watch the fake Undertaker.
God.
We're going to do it. Listen, we got four guys now. We need a traveling wrestling tour. We got to go
my
watch.
Enthusiasm for wrestling died permanently.
I've seen
it was
the real
stoned into the
wrestle.
Ground.
Three times.
I've seen the real Undertaker. I've seen a fake one. God.
And then I also noticed my last note here was double wide casket?
Yeah.
Oh, Christ.
In the Royal Rumble, I believe it was, when they were going through the talking about what actually happened, they were like, "The Undertaker was thrown into a double wide, double deep casket." It's just a casket for a fat bastard. It was just a big one. Like, there's no reason for it to be there, and that was the thing. That was in the lead-in package, which went through. I even wrote down the whole story of everything that happened, because in the visuals, the Undertaker, like, he gets in the thing, and he's like, "All right, we'll be back," and then dies, and then goes to heaven. Like, they actually have him.
Is that where he would go?
He's like, yeah. I'm like, really? You're like, okay. But before this, was he not the dead man? Because
I would think that going to heaven would be his final form. That would be his ultimate goal, is to, like, get to the next level. I think his character is simply in purgatory.
Yeah, but if he's the dead man, how did he die and go to heaven? And then, it was very odd.
Yeah.
It was a very odd thing. I like that Ted DiBiase just bribing the Undertaker. How do you know that's another Undertaker? Because he's being bribed with money. What makes you think the character's there? Why are you such a moron?
DiBiase had his hands all over this, didn't he? Because wasn't he part of the Tatanka Luger thing too?
Yeah.
Yeah, because he was bankrolling Tatanka.
Behind the scenes, yeah.
I don't mean to backtrack and get us into a Luger match. But
please don't.
I just love that Luger was like the biggest dullard, like the biggest mark, because everybody kept on accusing him of selling out and he couldn't just explain himself.
I know. He just should have brought a bank statement to the ring. No deposit from Ted DiBiase.
There, problem solved. I don't need to fight.
Done.
In the Undertaker match, there was a really weird bit, because they were like tombstoning each other and clothesline each other and then waiting for them to sit up, because they were like, he's not going to pin until he knows it's like he's not the real one. I'm like, so does that mean that the fake Undertaker thinks he's the real Undertaker? Because if he's not, like, he would pin him immediately and be like, I win, yay! But he wasn't going for the pin. I'm like, are you the... Do you literally think you're the real Undertaker? That was interesting.
Do you actually think... Again, he thought it was real.
He was like a method actor. Yeah, it was... They just
the best ones. Always
they
think it's
all
real.
Believe it's real.
In the pantheon of the Scott Steiners, the... who else thought it was real? To a degree, I think Sid Vicious probably thought it was real.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyways, that was the red. Do we have any suggestions, Larson? Have you thought about our next book of the match?
We've had a lot of suggestions on Twitter. I haven't had a chance to go through them at all yet. What's next month? Money in the Bank?
Money in the... What about... Well, no, that's sort of... Wait.
Do you want to do the do you want to do the Cena CM Punk?
Dan, oh, was
do.
That...
Money in the Bank?
Please
did you see that one?
Which one?
Dan, did you see the CM Punk Cena Money in the Bank match where CM Punk won the belt?
No. Because
you
I
came in after that.
I believe yeah. I came in after that. Because when I
let's
I
watch,
I had Cena Rock. I started the WrestleMania with Cena Rock. I saw nothing before then.
Okay. All right. Great.
Okay.
Great First idea.
Money in the Bank 2011.
2011.
Nice.
This was on the heels of the pipe bomb. Punk's contract was up for grabs. I guess
it was expiring.
It was
that
expiring
night.
That night. Behind the scenes,
they signed a new contract.
They signed a new contract. Booked the finish that night. During the pay-per-view, if I'm not mistaken, and then and it's a 5-star match again. Let's this is a good idea because we had a 5-star match with Owen Cena. Let's see what else Cena can do.
Yeah.
And watch this 5-star match from 2011. Our book of the match next month is gonna be I guess are we doing this 2 weeks from now, Dan?
Yes, we are.
All right.
Every
TB,
pay-per-view.
Are you in for 2 weeks from now?
In 2 weeks from now, I'm actually at Money in the Bank.
Shit. We've got an insider now. Nice.
Yeah, we're doing a... We decided we're going to road trip to Ohio, and we're going to do all three. We're going to do NXT. We're going to do Money in the Bank. We're going to do Raw one after another, night after night. So I might be sick of wrestling by the end of that, but we'll see.
Perfect. So are we.
Yeah, I'll let you know. I'll let you know as to whether or not I'm available, hopefully.
He's catching right up with us now. Oh. We're just completely sick of it. So yeah, there we go. Money in the Bank 2011. Let us know if you can come back. You're welcome
we'll
back
do.
Anytime, Larson.
Yes.
Larson and I do this every week. We change our format up a little bit on the non Dan episodes.
I can't
we
stomach do, every week. I can't do Raw every week. I wouldn't.
We
cope.
Do we do a like what's happening now, a current events thing. We sort of do kind of a Raw cap ish type thing. We debate or sort of talk about a timeless wrestling subject. What's the best faction? What's the best finisher? And then we do what we really want to do, which is called Kayfabe Corner, where Larson and I will trade off week to week. We'll come up with 12 wrestling names. 6 are real, 6 are fake, and we have to challenge the other one to see if he can figure out who's real and who's fake. So you're perfectly welcome to. If you want to keep your sanity, I'd probably suggest going the Dan route and showing up after the special events. But you're always welcome to come back.
Absolutely.
So mull it over, think about it, and let us know. And, next book of the match, Money in the Bank 2011. Anything else we need to add?
Kevin Latrine!
Yes.
Oh, shit! How could I have forgotten about Kevin Latrine? Okay,
yeah.
That's right. It's our Kevin. I'm sorry. There's so much going on.
It's Owens in Raw.
It's time for Owens in Raw. Now,
which you may
typically,
be soon, which will make this slightly weird.
Yeah.
Typically.
Hang on a minute.
Typically, we each come up with a different Kevin Owens name and backstory. But last week, I believe, Dan, you said, why don't we all come up with a different backstory for the
name?
Kevin Latrine. Of course, Kevin Owens' real name is Kevin Steen.
Yes.
So anything that rhymes with Steen or rhymes with Owens is fair game.
Yeah.
In this case, it's the slightly loose rhyme of Kevin Latrine.
That's a solid rhyme, to be fair. maybe with your accent, but with mine, it's fine.
I'm going to go first because I'm sure you guys have a better one than mine.
Oh,
and I don't want to be following up anybody else.
Don't be so sure.
Don't bother.
So here's mine. Kevin Latrine. Okay, so last night, I thought about this at first, and originally he was going to be like a world travel guy, and he's going to learn the real definition of latrine. I'm not going to do that. Last night, they had a spectacular match, Kevin Owens, John Cena. So they had such a great match, right? And on Twitter, everybody's blowing up, this is match of the year, blah, blah, blah. They listen to Going in Raw, and they're like, holy crap, they really love us. John, I want to be your best friend now, because we get along so well. We had such a great match. We're going to do it again in 2 weeks. We're going to be best friends. Hey, let's be tag teams. But we need a theme. And John's like, okay, well, why? What do you want it to be? He's like, well, John Cena, what rhymes with Cena? Pina. Hey, you can be John Pina, and I'll be Kevin Latrine, and it'll be like a pee-pee type thing. And Cena's like, that's a terrible idea. And then Kevin Owens just completely annihilates John Cena, says, shut up, and walks away. Kevin Latrine.
Marvelous. Uncle.
Can't top that.
I'm done. Thank God. Who's next?
I'll go next. I had a really complicated one, but then I came up with like I normally do. I had a really complicated one. I may do it later if nobody gets close to it. But after last night's match, just call him Kevin Latrine because he'll kick the shit out of you.
Nah.
That's a good one. Bum-tish. That's a good one.
So I had this sort of fairly complicated thing tying into his current thing where he really loves his family. And it was a bit of a twisted thing whereby he really loves his 8-year-old son, but a few years ago, his dream of becoming a professional wrestler was shattered after his son clogged the toilet, causing water to spill everywhere. Kevin stumbling down the stairs in a stupor from last night, not really knowing exactly where he was, slipped over and wrecked his knees. And it was the direct fault of his son, but he loves his son anyway. He had no other choice for a career other than to go and become a janitor at the local school. And then, for some inexplicable reason, a booker at WWE takes pity on him and allows him to try and fulfill his dream of becoming a professional wrestler to feed his family. And he still loves his son, even though his son essentially cost him the best years of his life. And his gimmick becomes that he takes his janitorial experience into the ring. And there you go, Kevin Latrine.
I love it.
That's actually kind of depressing, actually.
That is really depressing, actually. Wow. The darker, the better, though. Yeah. I don't care what Twitter says. Larson, hit the home run. Take us home.
All right. Kevin Owens is all roughly about our age. He's a child of the 80s, yeah?
Yeah.
And I think there is one 80s franchise that left such a large impression on him that he had to adopt it for his wrestling persona in the independent circuit. So there's this movie that came out in the year 1987 that was based on a line of cards and stickers, and he saw this movie. He loved it. He watched it over and over and over again. This movie was the Garbage Pail Kids movie. And so he thought to himself, when I'm a wrestler, I need a character that's based on a Garbage Pail Kid.
Yep.
So he started to think, what can I name myself? What's a good pun on Steen that's gross? Kevin Latrine. So he's wrestling on the independent circuit. He's got the shirt that looks like the sticker. It says Kevin Latrine on it. He comes out and he's all dirty. Maybe he smells like poop. I don't know. So he tours on the indie circuit for 15 years, makes a name for himself. NXT comes calling. Triple H loves his character. He loves Kevin Latrine. So he goes to NXT. He dominates. He becomes NXT champion. And it's time for him to go up to the main roster, and Vince calls him into his office and says, you know, Kevin, I really like this angle, but it's kind of a niche market, this 80 Garbage Pail Kids thing. You know, it'd be great if you were a plumber. Because you can still do the whole pee-pee and poo-poo thing, but it's more general. So your new name, since you unclog drains, is Kevin Flowens.
Yeah, you win the day. I think Larson wins the day.
Just end it.
I'm tapping out. He not only utilized Kevin Latrine, but he utilized bringing him up to Maine and changing his name. You win the day. Fuck that. You win the day. That was brilliant. I don't think we can have a better sign-off than that. Yeah. So, gentlemen, thank you for thanks everybody for tuning in. Gentlemen, thank you for showing up. TB, it's good to have you on staff.
Yes, pleasure. Absolutely. Good to have you.
All right, so Money in the Bank 2011 is our next one, and I think next month we'll return to, or 2 weeks from now, whenever we do it, we'll return to everybody coming up with their own Kevin Steen name and their own Kevin Steen background. Maybe we'll switch off week to week. We'll come up with another one and blah, blah, blah.
Well, now that he's firmly established on the main roster, do we consider a new person to give angles to?
Ooh. Okay, how about this? One last big Kevin Steen Owens blowout. And then we'll figure that out between now and then. Between now and
then,
the next
Blake
one.
And Murphy. It's going to be great.
Oh, God. No.
I don't know, it'd be hard to top dubstep douchebag.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, that's it for Going In Raw this week. We'll see you guys later.
Goodbye.
Bye.